Not by the scales on my nuts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the GM's Corner for the Boffin Banter Star Wars Actual Play podcast. And I am the GM once again, Curtis Weeb, here to talk to you about two episodes this week. Actually, we recorded episodes 4 and 5 and managed to edit both of those before I had an opportunity to do another GM's Corner. So we're going to talk about episode 4 first, and once I've wrapped that up and talked about a little bit of GM advice, I'm going to briefly address episode 5, where we had some pretty big developments. So the last session that we played, I came to a realization, which I'm going to address here really quickly. The first 3 episodes of An Aes Sedai Gamble were actually recorded quite accidentally on my computer's microphone. I had purchased a conference microphone to put on the center of the table, and I plugged it into one of the ports on the computer that I guess was not working, and without realizing, all of the recording had been done on that microphone. And so I often had questions as to why one side of the table was being broadcast much louder when the other ones are being recorded at a much further distance, it seemed, and how I was always coming through so much louder. And every single session, I would put the mic further from myself in the hopes that everyone else would be heard more, and that just never seemed to be the case. And even the smallest noises on my keyboard, when I just tap a key here and there, would be this loud sound during the recording. Anyway, long story short, the last episode that I recorded ended up being with that microphone, and I think you'll notice quite an increase in quality of sound as far as the rest of the players were concerned. Everyone came in very clearly, and I was much happier with the recording. Now, there's still some other issues that we're having with it. Namely, it picks up everything, including people having a drink if there's ice in the glass or thumping on the table. So I'm going to look into how I can manage that. This is all very new to me. I have hosted a podcast before, but it was an online one. It was called The Process, where I talked about comic creation with a couple of friends. So this is a different experience for me, and I'm slowly learning as I go. So I appreciate everyone bearing with me as I figure out this whole system and hopefully make the podcast better with every episode. So today I just wanted to dive right into the faction system. Now, I've talked a lot about it, mostly in passing, and I haven't dove deep into a lot of the factions that are actually present. I haven't talked about some of the things happening behind the scene, but I feel like there's been enough happening now in the story that I think even, as the players are uncovering information and as you, the listener, are tuning in, I'm sure there's some connections that you're drawing between the actions of the characters and some of the factions that have been revealed so far. And I want to talk a bit about some of the truths that have been happening that have affected the characters directly, and also talk about, obviously, the factions that have been revealed. I don't want to go into too many spoilers as far as some of the other ones that are still yet to surface. So the first person that I want to talk about is Modo. Now, Modo was very involved in the last episode. He made a brazen attack on the holding facility at Docking Bay 47 to release Echo, who clearly is very important to him. And that came up also with one of the character roles that they found out that they've been connected for a long time. Modo had a plan that affected Episode 3 and Episode 4, but let's go back to Episode 3 for a second. In Episode 3, we saw that encounter between Koderic and a faction of armed thugs led by Echo, and it wasn't clear to the characters at the time what exactly was happening. They didn't know who the two factions were. They learned that at the end of Episode 3, that Koderic worked for Chalu, and that it was Koderic that gave them that mission. But they weren't sure at that point even who he was. It became clear as the last few sessions have gone on that Koderic works for Chalu. So I actually want to talk a little bit about what was happening in that scene. Now that we've had 2 episodes in between, things have become a little bit more clear for the characters. So I'm going to reveal to you, the listener, a little bit more about behind-the-scenes things that I did talk with the players a little bit about afterwards as they were trying to draw some connections between all the events that happened. Now, Moto had a plan. Now, Moto is an upcoming, kind of a young hot that's out to make a name for himself in City 17. I think it's pretty clear at this point that City 17 is being attacked on all fronts by different factions trying to gain control of it. It's one of the last cities on Nar Shaddaa that hasn't been solidified in power. There is one faction that has had power for a certain amount of time, and that hasn't been revealed yet either, but they have lost a lot of influence, and other factions have come into play. A little bit more powerful, some less powerful, but everyone is making a play for this city, and Moto, just like everybody else, wants a piece of the pie. It was revealed in the last session that Moto had a significant amount of money that he was using to spread his influence throughout the city. Who that was, we're not sure, but it is known that Moto was not being supported by his family in this action. So Moto's this young guy who has everything to prove. He wants to show that, you know, he should be taken seriously, that he's not just some young upstart, that he is a major contender for control of City 17. So that led to his eventual attack on Koderic. Now, Koderic is someone that works very closely with Chalu the Hutt. Chalu the Hutt obviously is a very powerful contender, someone that Moto sees as either a rival or someone that could be manipulated into certain actions, hence his attack on Koderic. Now, in the faction system, he had a scheme that involved Koderic, and that was to locate and capture. Now, obviously, the location part worked out for him, but the capturing did not work so well, and so Koderic got away, and that was actually all in the faction system, where I rolled a few sets of dice, and the fact that Koderic got away was part of that. Now, this brings up an interesting point, I think, about this open world system that I'm creating. This could have all gone very differently if the players had intervened and either rescued Koderic or assisted Moto's thugs. There's a lot of different ways it could have gone, and that would have changed their scheme between Episode 3 and Episode 4. This also came into play a little bit later. Because he was not able to capture Koderic, he had to come up with a secondary plan. He'd already put a lot of his resources into this capturing maneuver that didn't pan out for him. And again, through the faction system, he learned that Chalu the Hutt was trying to find Talia Chow, which I'm going to talk about Chalu in a little bit as well. But he was trying to find Talia. Now, of course, we know that Chalu was attempting to make that connection to Talia through the Docking Bay 47 security procedures as a means to make a formal apology for the failed mission that he sent them on and as a means to get closer to Ember Loken. But Moto didn't know that. All he knew was that Talia was on the radar of Chalu, and so at the very end, once again made an attempt to apprehend her, spending more resources in a high-risk location due to the earlier attack, and obviously that did not end well. That was not a dice roll. That was all player interaction. The players successfully managed to take out the thugs, to apprehend Echo, and even though they were arrested by City 17 personnel, they stopped that attempt on being captured, or Talia being captured. So those are moments where the faction system depends on the player's actions. There wasn't a role with that. I wanted to see how the players would get themselves out of that situation. But those choices and those actions will come into play at the end of the session when I update my faction system and I make some new roles and change the schemes for each of the different factions that remain. Now, one of the things that happened in behind the scenes, which was very briefly mentioned by Chalu at the end of episode 4, was that Moto was nearly wiped out. He also mentioned Talba the Hutt, how there was an attempt by Talba against Moto, and all that information is true. Talba is another hot faction vying for City 17 who was pretty tired of Moto's actions within the city and located his base, wiped out everybody there, leaving Moto with a handful of men with no resources and no more influence after 3 failed attempts on various different people. So then we had Moto coming into the Docking Bay 47 holding facility, trying to get Echo out, his last true strength that he has left. And As far as I'm concerned, Modo and Echo are wiped out as a faction. They're not going to be coming into the faction system anymore, which has been really interesting to watch because all of this has been happening in the background and the players have had nothing really to do with it, albeit they had a little bit of contribution in the last episode. But most of it has been just Modo expanding too quickly and taking too many risks based on this character that I've made up for him, and the dice haven't been working for him, unfortunately. Modo's future is going to be interesting. I'm going to be eliminating him as a faction, but he's still going to be around as an NPC. Both him and Echo are going to have some grudges against our characters for, you know, standing and fighting when they made an offer. Hey, you know, we can work together on this. And then, of course, Echo is going to have a real bone to pick as they grievously wound her in episode 4, and you can bet that she's going to be back for some payback. Now let's talk a little bit about Chalu the Hutt. Chalu is just been revealed. He clearly is a very powerful character. In fact, he's already set up an estate in City 17. So that insinuates that he's been around for a little while, but is only very recently coming out and making a much bigger play for control of the city. Now he learned through the faction system that Talia's team knew where Ember Loken was, and he wanted to extend an apology to both her and to their team for the job that he had hired them to do, which was steal some information and some weapons from a Imperial depot controlled and run by Moff Farrow. Now, he talked a little bit in that episode about why he wanted to screw over Moff Farrow, but he didn't talk about the full reasons. He didn't go into the details. You learned that there was some kind of betrayal, and clearly Chalu didn't think too kindly of that betrayal. And he wanted to extend an apology because Moff Farrow is also a very clever man and found out about the job, set up an ambush, and obviously we already know what happened in that scenario. But the real reason that Chalu wanted to talk to Talia is that he has a long-term plan to get rid of Moff Farrow. Him and Moff Farrow were once allies, and I'm going to eventually reveal what happened between them, but for now we'll leave that a bit of a mystery. You don't cross a hut, and Chalu is very much a creature of habit, and he wants Ember as a bargaining chip because he knows Ember is very important to Moff Farrow for a lot of different reasons. They used to work together, and he also knows that Ember has information about Chalu and Moff Farrow working together. So she's a very important piece of this puzzle between Chalu and the Moff. So I think it'll be interesting to see. Chalu has made an offer to the players, and it seems like a lot of them are pretty on board with it. He wants to offer them an opportunity to do some good work, get paid real well for it, without the huge risks that they've been taking on with their lives and with their equipment and with their ship, and he's going to reward them handsomely for it. So a lot of the players seem pretty excited about that. Okadess obviously a little bit hesitant to get involved, but we'll see how everything pans out. Now, this episode started off in a very interesting way. I had done, of course, my work on the faction system between the episodes, and there were a few different factions at play here. Chalu the Hutt had secured the release of the players, obviously through some sort of extortion or bribe or whatever else he as a Hutt has access to. He managed to secure their release without any questions, despite the fact that they were involved in a heavily armed conflict at essentially an airport. I don't think that aspect of the secured release made an impact on the players. Maybe it's just been the fact that the game has been so over-the-top, crazy, action-violent anyway. But the reality is they were essentially released after being culpable for severe damages and murder, as far as the state would be concerned, or the officials of City 17. So they managed to get out. Now, because I also rolled the kind of last stand of Modo, that he lost everything, he really had to make that play on Echo to make sure that he got her out along with the last two associates that were also arrested. Probably because they would be able to pin him in any kind of investigation, but at the same time, they were the last of his resources. He really had lost everything. Those two things added together to make the encounter at Docking Bay 47 holding facility very interesting, because what should have been them walking out and the story beginning came in direct conflict of what Modo had to do, and Modo wasn't there for them. He didn't care about the players at that point. I mean, there was talk that Echo was going to bring Talia in, but at that point, she would have been under the impression that the mission was still on. But clearly, when Modo made his desperate attack on the holding facility, that was not the case. And it was just a matter of escaping with whatever resources he had left to maybe try to regroup and replan and figure out a new strategy to make his way into City 17 as a viable player. And what I find so interesting is that so many of these story encounters have come about as a random, or maybe not so random in some cases, just depending on the influence that each of the factions has, but it is a really random dice roll that affects whether or not these really devious schemes that especially the Hutts are trying to pull off, they have this large effect that the characters rarely see. And in the few times that they do see it, it's a really big moment or a really big event. And I think moving forward, it's going to be really interesting to see how much further they're going to get involved with these schemes. Are they actually going to be the facilitators of these schemes? Am I going to have to eventually make them a faction and at the end of every episode ask, what's your scheme? What's your plan for between this session and the next session? I mean, it's completely a possibility that they could become influential enough for that to happen. With that said, I would like to talk a little bit about some GM advice that these are things that are really starting to become apparent to me as I'm running this game and trying a new style of storytelling where I am taking, I would say in a lot of ways, a backseat to facilitate the story that the characters are trying to tell. And in a lot of ways, their choices are affecting how I plan for the next session. I mean, obviously I have to do a certain amount of planning story-wise, just so I have some things in place that if they decide to go option A or option B, then there's a few things that I have ready and I'm not just grasping at straws and just completely going off the rails with no plans. But when I first started this campaign, I saw it going in a much different direction. I think some of the players originally had expected a little bit more of a serious tone. But then, you know, we had characters like Doc and Muzzo that are very much more of a comedic spin on the game. And I still think we're managing a really nice balance between some great storytelling moments and some real great comedy. I think it would have been a mistake to really just remove the comedy and be like, this is a serious game. We want to have, you know, all these great character moments, because so many of the great character moments have been absolutely hilarious. Obviously, both Doc and Muzzo have brought some really amazing comedy to the series, and all the characters have had their moments of comedy, but also, as I said, lots of great moments of drama, which happened even more so in episode 5, which I will talk to after I talk about GM advice. Something that I used in episode 4, which made a much bigger impact in episode 5, was this idea of character intrigue. It's already built into the game with the obligation system, but in a lot of ways, I feel that just to rely on that as a random occurrence throughout the course of every episode, it could lead to the eventuality where some characters are never going to have their histories or their pasts tie into the current storyline. And it's important, I think, to have every single player at the table feel like not only are they contributing to the main story, but their character's development is also very much a part of the story. We're seeing this now with Okadessa. She's had some moments where she's talking a bit about her past through Koderic, and even though they come from different worlds in a lot of ways, they have this shared history of being displaced and of having no direction and feeling alone in the world. And also, we're starting to see some fruits of Doc's labor as he starts to build a small empire, which is the impression that I'm getting, and I think that's something that's going to become more clear, that he has these intentions for something bigger for his character than simply just being a medical droid. And that was never discussed at the beginning of the game. He didn't really make his intentions clear with what he wanted to do, and I think it's all been this natural evolution of the way he's played Doc to the character that he's become now. The key to what I'm trying to say here is that you want to make each session have a little bit of personalized storytelling, a little bit of a personal flair that develops each character, even just a little bit, so that they all have this little moment of development or reveal that either makes their character a bit more interesting or the other characters learn something new that changes the dynamic of the group in a certain way. Now, it has been revealed to the other players that Doc was the one that created Darth Vader, But imagine the impact of that when they all find out that he was the one that created one of the most nefarious villains in the galaxy. It'll be an interesting session when that happens. And getting back to Okadessa a little bit, with Koderic in particular, now, I had created all of these NPCs long before we started playing the game. I had a cheat sheet of about 12 characters that had about a half-page write-up with their history and their motivation and some special abilities that they might have. Koderic was one of those characters from day one that I had this tortured past that he was once a Jedi, or training to be a Jedi at the Jedi Temple when the purges happened, and he was forced into exile, and his master was killed, and he is, you know, a young kid on the street forced to fight for everything that he had, and it made him rotten and corrupt and angry. And so as a child with no direction, with no mentor to help him control those feelings and that anger, it eventually led to this long, dark slide essentially he has become a Sith, even though he doesn't follow the tenets of that belief. He just doesn't understand what he's doing. He doesn't understand the full extent of the damage that he's causing by using the Force and anger. And all of that was created before I even knew that Shannon was going to be playing Okadessa, the Twi'lek smuggler with a Force Adept or being Force sensitive. So that just played really nicely into a story that eventually, if they ever met, there could be some really interesting story dynamics about, you know, the morality of the Force and what happens when somebody has the full capability of using it, but not understanding the codes or having those codes in place to give them guidance. And what happens when one with more power and more knowledge and understanding trains someone who has no idea of what the Force even is, and the person that's training them is corrupt without really themselves understanding that they are. And that is one of the great things that can come out of some intense work before you start a campaign. If you make some non-player characters and do the work beforehand and make them real living characters, you can have some amazing storytelling options open up as the story goes on, and it'll bring them into conflict with certain characters who have certain belief systems, or make them bond or whatever. You know, it just adds that level of authenticity that wouldn't be there if you just pulled a name out of a hat and said, you know, this is Daryl, and he likes to sell guns on the street. It just, if you know Daryl had a really hard past and he was on the street selling these guns because he's got a sick child at home and his family desperately needs him and all these kinds of things, there might be, it might never come to light, but you as a storyteller have a firmer grasp of the world in which the characters find themselves. But one last thing that I think would be interesting to talk about when talking about the GM advice that I have learned over the course of GMing this campaign and many campaigns before that is use player ideas and comments. Now, it seems kind of like a cheat, and I guess in some ways it is, but when players make little comments like, oh, I bet you this character is behind it and, you know, he's doing it for these reasons, sometimes it can be rewarding for the player to have that suspicion or that hunch come true, even if that wasn't your original plan. If it works within your story and it actually makes sense, reward that. Just, you could change your story a little bit to reward that fast thinking and for the characters making those connections. I find when the players learn that they're right about their hunches, it's much more rewarding than just saying, oh no, you were wrong, and it was this guy. And I think that's the moments that, as a GM, you should live for, is to have your players really happy with the reveal or really happy with the result, and that they were right about it. They guessed right, and they drew these connections. And then also, specifically talking about other episodes that have happened before, Quelvin, for instance, when this idea that there was a gift there, and that all came about because Shannon was playing Okadessa, just thinking on her feet, oh, I have a package here, and I just thought it could be really fun to roll with that, even if it doesn't make a lick of sense. You can explain it away a little bit later. Just think about it as the story is going on. I'm like, okay, well, how did this happen? Well, it led to this eventual moment where Colvin gets a scar from his father, which is actually going to be tied into his history that we'd already discussed beforehand, that him and his father have this relationship that has shaped him in a very specific way. And I'm not going to give that away yet because that could come up in the future, in future episodes. But those are all those little moments that if you just roll with it And one of the things that I've seen a lot of people online talking about is when you're playing a game or you're running a game as a game master, say yes and rather than no. And I used to be a very combative GM. I used to feel like my main goal was to stop the players and stonewall them at every corner and make them play out the story that I had planned for them. And I think that was just an experience and not having the confidence to roll with going off the rails and allowing the players to explore this world. Because for me, the world was only a finite road. And as soon as that road ended, there was nothing beyond it. And all around it was just a vast empty waste where I had nothing planned. And so how could I possibly tell a story where I don't have anything planned? Of course, that comes with experience in storytelling and playing games and writing stories and reading stories. But it really is to the benefit of everyone if you just allow that freedom and roll with those moments that in the moment might seem a bit ridiculous, but just go with it and let the players really embrace it and as a group embrace it. I guess what I'm saying is allow those impromptu moments to guide your game and to be a really fun part of it, because some really amazing things will come out of it. And down the road, it'll be something that you talk about for years. And that's what I find. It's always the unplanned moments that people talk about, as opposed to remember that really great story moment that Curtis had planned for that session. That's generally not the way it goes. So relax a little and really enjoy the improvisational element of role-playing games. Do not be afraid of it, and you will see some awesome results. Okay, let's talk a little bit about episode 5. Before we wrap up this special two-part, three-part, I suppose, episode of the GM's Corner. And wow, that was quite the session. I had some plans going into it. Obviously, with every session I do a write-up at the beginning, it just allows me, first of all, to set the tone. It allows me to get the story flowing right from the beginning. And it also allows me to focus in on what I think is going to be an important aspect of the next episode based on the events of the previous one. Okadessa had made a connection with Koderic, or she had at least saved him. They had a brief moment where they talked a little bit about the Force, and I had to remember that Koderic would have been absolutely desperate to find Okadessa. Koderic has been living alone, and he thought he was the last in the universe of his kind, of a person that can tap into and use the Force. It was this massive revelation. It was funny because when we started that session and I read the intro, and I cut it from the actual episode just because there was a lot of table talk, and sometimes I just want to get that beginning out of the way to get to the core of the story, but a lot of people assumed that that was going to be a romantic interlude, that he was there to visit her for romantic reasons, and I suppose I did frame it that way a little bit, but it was really anything but. It was really about connection and a person that had felt completely alone for his entire life since he lost his master had finally found true purpose again. And it is going to be really interesting to see where that goes. Holy crap, am I excited for that story. Of course, we also had Doc with an insane reveal at the end of this episode. But with Doc, I needed to put him in a situation that really challenged his moral compass, because he had been making some really interesting decisions that I felt, man, I could really test him to see where his real motivation lies. Is he really about the money? Because every time it comes up, that's what he says. Just show me the money. I'll do it for the money. And I wanted to put him in a situation where he had to make that choice. There was no way around it. He could fast talk his way out of it as much as he possibly could, which he managed to do, of course, because it's fucking Doc. But he still had to make the choice. And interestingly enough, he chose the money over making an attempt to spare this boy of any misery and saving him. We also had Quelbin, who has been a brunt of jokes for most of this campaign, and I think that Lonnie, who plays Quelbin, has been quite fine with that. I still wanted to give him a moment where he got to use his skill set in an interesting way, and he'd been talking for quite some time. He's talked about his ship a lot. We haven't had an opportunity for him to really shine with that, and I thought, what better way than to have him on his own, flying a ship, delivering some cargo, and having a little bit of a conspiracy or a little bit of surprise happen while that was going on. And of course, the massive reveal of Imelin, who Chalo had sent along as a bit of insurance to make sure the job was done properly, which ended up being for the best in the end. Of course, there is a bit of a romantic finale to that. I wouldn't call it romantic so much as a debaucherous romp in the hay. And of course, we had Muzzo and Talia. And then we had a new player for that session. We actually were lucky enough to have one of the illustrators who works on the books and has numerous pieces in Edge of the Empire, Age of Rebellion, and Force and Destiny. And his name is Joel Hustak. And he was in town visiting Owen, who plays Doc. So we just managed to have him slide in as Grodo, the Rodian, who is also in the employ of Chalu the Hutt. Of course, he turned out to be a bit of a traitor, which was kind of funny for his just kind of one-time appearance. I appreciated the fact that he was willing to sacrifice his character for a little bit of comedy. But that story was, they have been talking about Echo ever since they met her. They've had this vendetta against her, and I can't say I quite fully understand it. I think maybe just because she's a powerful opponent, and they hadn't really come up against anyone that had been a real threat, and she clearly was. And I also think that Jordan, who plays Talia, had a bit of was coveting that armor and wanted to make it his own. For me, that was a pretty easy idea. Let's just have them. Chalu said he'd help them with the hunt. Let's just cut to that point where they found out where they are, and let's see what kind of decisions that they make. And, of course, that ended disastrously. As I joked about, I don't know if it was actually in the episode, I did mention after the game was over that I had expected them to plan a little bit. I didn't expect them to just smash into that club and level the place, but that's what happened, and it did not go well because, well, it just wasn't very well planned. Now, it was a great episode, though, because I feel like despite all of, you know, the crazy things that happened, there were some great plot developments and character developments that led to some very interesting things in episode 6, which we recorded a few days ago. And I can't wait for you guys to hear that episode. I'll be cutting that next week. All of their decisions have led to another level of character development that, you know, the idea that Okadessa, whose session in episode 5 was a completely dialogue-driven one. It was about their past. It was about the Force. It was about this journey that she now had the ability to take alongside Koderic, who was going to be her mentor. And what would that look like? What kind of future does she have training alongside Koderic, who is clearly fallen, but is also, there is a real sense of excitement, and that sense of loneliness is gone for him. He has purpose again. And now, of course, we don't know his full background. We don't know what he's been doing for Chalu all these years. I know, but the players and you, the listener, do not know as of yet. And I can't wait for that reveal to happen, because it's going to become pretty clear pretty quickly what kind of character Koderic is. I do think that episode 5 showed that the players are willing to follow a more serious storyline if the opportunity presents itself. There was, of course, still a lot of comedy, even in the really grisly scene of Doc and his moral quandary. There was still moments for lightness and for us to have a laugh. But I appreciate the fact that when presented with something a little bit more meaningful for their characters, they were willing to fall into that and work with me on telling the story together. And I'm really lucky that way as a GM, that I have players that really appreciate that I'm trying to assist them in telling a story about these characters, their characters, and that they come along with me for the ride. So it's not always an opportunity that you have. Sometimes you have players that are just much more about the characters as numbers, or they just want to beat every opponent that you throw at them. They're miserable when they're defeated. My players are not like that. They revel in their defeats. They love those moments where they have failures, and it adds so much more that they don't just get huffy at me if I take things away or if I throw really difficult tasks at them. They like that, as it's a development for their character. It's a development for the story. So I do count myself very lucky that I have that kind of group of players. Now, that said, I just want to talk a little bit about my favorite aspect of episode 5. And that was how it just naturally came to this cliffhanger conclusion for so many of the characters. With the car bombing, that had a little bit of planning, and I have to admit, there was an opportunity, however, that they would notice it before that bomb went off and they could have got out, but everyone failed their checks, and I gave them a little bit of a second opportunity for them to at least see their attacker before the bomb went off, and they managed to, with enough advantages, make that second roll. that just happened kind of naturally. I planned for there to be this kind of attack by a character that you're going to find out about in episode 6, so I don't want to say too much more about that. But this character has been in the background for a long time as well, and he's been an independent player. He doesn't work for any of the factions, but he's been creeping in the shadows. And now that the characters have made some choices about who they're going to work for, at least seemingly, that immediately put this character into their storyline because of that specific choice to do work for Chalu. We also had the finale with Okadessa with the reveal that, holy shit, she now has a lightsaber. Koderic is giving her her fucking mentor's lightsaber, and that was a massive reveal. And I talked to Shannon afterwards, and she actually had no clue that that was going to happen. Even building up to the moment, she thought it was just going to be some kind of offer that, you know, I'll train you and we'll see how this goes. So lightsaber reveal, you can actually hear, even though I did some editing at the finale of episode 5, you can hear her actually take a gasp because she wasn't expecting it. And I loved that I was able to, A, hear that in the recording, and B, that it was, we were able to keep it. She actually started clapping, and I had to cut that out just because it was taking a little bit longer, and I wanted to keep the tone of the scene in place when I did the final cut. Of course, Quelbin had a bit of a cliffhanger. It seems as though he is going to be attacking the pirates, the last three that are remaining in that place, before he was roughly taken from his piloting seat and taken out back by Imelin. So we'll see how that goes. Unfortunately, Lonnie was unable to be there for our last session, so that story is going to have to wait for a future episode. And then, of course, the reveal of Doc, which we were all a little bit shocked at, how, you know, he saved that kid. And I thought there was going to be kind of this altruistic moment where he got that kid out of there just, you know, by the skin of his teeth, at great personal risk to himself. But no, that is not what we got. Instead, we have Doc in a very sinister, dark tone saying, "You work for me now, boy." And wow, episode 6 coming up. That becomes a pretty interesting plot point that this is really the intention that Doc has. He is going to make his own empire. And I'm very curious to see how that goes. It could divide the players for all I know. I'm not even sure. But it's building up to some very exciting stuff. So at that note, I'm going to cut this off. It's been going a little bit longer than I had planned to. Once again, I want to thank everyone for tuning into the show. We're slowly building our fan base. I'm finally hiring some artists to do some original character work so that I can share those a little bit easier and post them places without, you know, people saying, "Hey, you stole my art." I feel really bad about that right now, that I'm just finding internet art and applying it to my campaign. I really hope that at some point I can get all of these NPCs and all of these characters illustrated, original character art, so that it's completely our own thing. But that takes time and it takes money, and I'm just doing this for fun right now, so hopefully people understand. Again, I thank you so much for your support, and we'll have episode 6 coming out on next Thursday. I'm going to be traveling a bit for the next little while, so I'm not sure if we'll be able to hit that every Thursday for the next few weeks, but I will continue to do my absolute goddamn best to make sure that we get one out at least every 2 weeks so that you guys have something to listen to, and you'll have some more Bop and Banter coming your way. All right, well, that'll be enough for me, Curtis Weeb of the GM's Corner for the Bop and Banter podcast. We'll talk to you all real soon.